first in Wisconsin's race for governor. Both candidates agree that more state funding needs to go to local police departments to address crime and public safety. But the style of their campaign's appeals on the issue couldn't be more different. Evan Casey reports.
You've likely seen the campaign ads by now. They're hard to miss.
We've witnessed a surge in crime, the theft, and shots fired.
Evers broke his promise. Now we're less safe than ever.
Tim Michaels will have our back.
And stand strong against violent crime.
In Wisconsin's gubernatorial race, Republican candidate Tim Michaels has blasted Democratic Governor Tony Evers for rising crime and said it would be one of his top priorities as governor. Evers has addressed the issue by pointing to spending increases he's made for local police departments across the state. No matter the candidate's approach, crime is one of the top issues that Wisconsin voters are focusing on this election. It's also a highly partisan issue. A Marquette University Law School poll found 74% of Republicans said they were concerned about crime, compared to just 38% of Democrats. Barry Burden is a political science professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says Michael's campaign can benefit by attacking the incumbent on the issue.
As long as, you know, that is effective in reminding people about their concerns, maybe their fears about crime, it will maybe turn them against Governor Evers as they search for an alternative.
According to the State Department of Justice, violent crimes are up in recent years. Some national experts, and Evers himself, blame recent increases on the tumultuous pandemic years. But what can a governor do to address crime in a community? Kenneth Street is a law professor at UW-Madison. He says one method is a longer-term public health approach aimed at addressing the root causes of crime. Another approach? More state funding for local law enforcement.
If you were really going to have a vision as a governor, you'd say, I recognize that the local people have the best chance of understanding what kind of interventions could we do to turn it around.
Evers has said if he wins the race, he'd propose shared revenue increases for local governments. That plan includes $10 million for first responders. He's already allocated millions in federal pandemic relief funds for local police. The majority of those grants went to Milwaukee, which is seeing record numbers of homicides. Michaels has also committed to increasing state spending for local police, but he hasn't said how he'd pay for it. His Back the Blueprint plan calls for more police officers in, quote, dangerous neighborhoods across the state. That's encouraging to Andrew Wagner, the president of the Milwaukee Professional Police Association. That union endorsed Michaels for governor.
He doesn't want the status quo. He wants to increase that police force and make sure that the city has what they need to be safe.
But not everyone believes more cops is the answer. Angela Lang is a director of the Milwaukee-based community activist group Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, or BLOC. She believes Michael's approach is the wrong one.
Some of the things that he supported, it feels very heavy-handed. It's very much, even if you go to his website, it's very much Back the Blue. Whereas in contrast, we see Governor Evers kind of lead with a more compassionate approach.
She wants to see more investment in public education, housing, healthcare, and mental health resources. Those are things Evers invested in with pandemic funds.
Those are what's going to help thriving communities and hopefully reduce crime as well.
Issues of crime and policing can be extremely contentious. And nowhere is that clear than in the campaign's discussion of Kenosha in 2020. After a police shooting there, the city erupted in protests and riots that turned deadly. Michaels and other prominent Republicans have made an effort to blame Evers for what they say was a lack of leadership during the crisis. Others support Evers' decision. Kyle Johnson is BLOC's political director. He lives in Kenosha, and he says Michaels is using the incident to score political points.
It's hogwash. I mean, I have stronger language that I could use, but I won't because you're on radio. But honestly, it's dishonest and it's hurting people. It's costing people their safety.
The candidates met for their only debate last Friday. Michael said if he was elected, there would be a, quote, new sheriff in town. On November 8th, the voters will decide for themselves. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, could Wisconsin see a rebound of split-ticket voting in this year's midterms? That's a possibility raised in a recent piece of political analysis in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It points to recent polling from Marquette University that shows Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson with a lead over his Democratic challenger. Same polls show Democratic Governor Tony Evers with a smaller lead over his Republican opponent. With partisanship on the rise, split-ticket voting has been declining for decades, but in a closely contested state like Wisconsin, a little bit can go a long way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you split your votes, picking and choosing? Republican here, Democrat there, or other in that other place? When is the last time you split your ticket in an election? Was it in the last election, 1980s, sometime in between? Or are you party line all the way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Laura Brown is a political scientist and author of Amateur Hour, Presidential Character and the Question of Leadership. Laura, thanks a lot for joining us.
Absolutely. It's great to be with you.
Now, you are particularly interested, I think, in states like Wisconsin with a statewide race for governor and a statewide race for U.S. Senate. Why is split ticket voting so much on your mind this time around?
Well, I think it's on my mind because there are these states like Wisconsin that are so close and they are so competitive in both races. And what we see is that there have been some differences in the polling. We also know that voters sometimes think about a senatorial race or a gubernatorial race differently. They say to themselves, what issues are more likely to matter for a candidate who's going to Washington versus one who's staying home and looking after their state? So I think there are a lot of specifics and particulars with regard to this election. On the Democratic side, you can think about something like abortion that might push voters to actually vote Democratic at the state level, since that's now a decision at the state. But then, of course, the overall state of the economy, in the sense that that the Democrats and President Biden are not really caretaking the economy, and that inflation's a big issue, may be pushing some people to say, you know what, I want more Republicans in Washington. So I think there's a lot of cross pressures and a lot of specifics that could make a difference, even if it's just a small number of voters.
I think back to the 2018 election here in Wisconsin, where I was doing our election night coverage at about 8 o'clock in 1 second. They called the race for Senator Tammy Baldwin, Democrat. She ended up winning by 11 points. Governor race, nail biter, Democrat Tony Evers wins by about 1%. Clearly, somebody was out there doing something other than going party line all the way.
Absolutely. I mean, I really do believe that there are voters who are both cross-pressured, and there are voters who really think about the candidate themselves. They aren't just focused on, say, the party line issues. They are trying to make the best choice with the best person. And even though it is a declining share of voters, and when we look to, you know, a couple of the races in 2020 where we saw this in New Hampshire and North Carolina, where opposite parties won each race, what you saw was that for the most part, it was popular incumbents who won each race, even though they were of opposite parties. And it was also clear that somewhere between about 3 to 7% of the voters in those races must have split their tickets. So this is where, again, you know, every vote counts, and it really will matter how close these races are on election day.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pat is with us in Three Lakes. Pat, hi.
Hi. I've been voting since Dwight Eisenhower. And it's kind of interesting that I split my ticket almost every time. And the reason I split my ticket is because I vote for the country. I don't vote for an individual. I think that's the Democratic way to do things. I think it's, if you do your own research, there's no pressure on you because you know who you're voting for. And so if you're dumb enough to vote party line all the time, this is what you get. And I guess that's my comment.
Pat, thanks a lot. Now, I think there are more people unlike Pat these days, Laura, who are more prone to vote party line. But Pat, clearly a pick and choose candidate by candidate.
Yeah, I mean, look, I do believe that, you know, individual candidates matter. I mean, I wrote a book that is focused on presidential character for exactly that reason, that I do think that character says something about, you know, how that person is going to do the job, whether they have, you know, a Republican lean or a Democratic lean in terms of their issue positions, and they will be pressured by their parties. But I do think that it is not, and it should not be, kind of looked down upon by partisans for people to actually cast these sort of independent type votes.
When people analyze members of Congress, it seems like there's a trend where you have fewer, or basically no liberal Republicans, fewer moderate Republicans, no, or at least fewer conservative Democrats. Are the parties kind of sorting themselves out enough that may, in a way that might make split ticket voting less likely?
Well, the parties have certainly done that. We now see both Republicans and Democrats being much more ideologically and sort of consistent with their policies and their beliefs. So you have fewer, you know, kind of moderate or independent-leaning partisans affiliated with either party. But what has resulted is a larger number of Americans saying that they self-identify as an independent because of it. So the share of each party's voters in the overall electorate is actually going down, and the number of Americans who say that they think of themselves as independents has gone up and sustained in the, you know, mid-40s for quite a while now. And I think this really speaks to the fact that partisans should be more concerned about voters who are thinking about issues and are thinking about candidates as not being altogether one thing.
We're talking to political scientist Lara Brown about split ticket voting, when people vote for some R's, some D's, some G's or I's or L's too, maybe along the way on the ballot, and if that could change in this year's midterm elections. Call it at 800-642-1234. Do you vote for individual candidates and you pick some from different parties? When's the last time you did it, if it's been a while? Call 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about split-ticket voting. When someone votes, say, for a Republican in this race, a Democrat in that one, author and political scientist Lara Brown stays with us. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you split your tickets when you vote? Did you used to, but you don't anymore? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Scott is with us in Superior. Scott, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I used to split my votes. I consider myself more financially conservative, but socially more liberal. But with a lot of like the misinformation and type of campaigns out there, I've found myself more on the social voting block, so more Democratic. And so I was wondering, how do we address that misinformation campaign? Because it's, to me, it misconstrues a lot of what both parties are talking about.
Scott, thanks for the call. Lara, misinformation in the election, Scott says he's that swayed him to stop splitting.
Yeah, I mean, really, what a fantastic question. I mean, I do know that there are so many people who feel as though they can't get good information anymore, because part of it has to do with the fact that a lot of legitimate and worthwhile media is actually subscription-based, and a lot of the kind of conspiracy-minded, all about the clicks and the grift is free and available on our social media feeds. So I do think that there is this very real problem where people are believing many things that are not true, and it's because it's difficult, more difficult than you would think it should be, to get good information easily.
Scott, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Chris joins us now in Appleton. Chris, hi.
Hi, thank you. You know, I used to split my ticket. I made it a point to split my ticket. But I stopped doing that after our state was so gerrymandered after 2010. I just don't want that much power in control, or that much power to one party. Thank you.
Chris, thanks for the call. Chris, disillusioned by our gerrymandering in the state, Lara.
Yeah, well, you know, what is so interesting, and this gets to this difference between a governor and a senator, but it's also true at the House level or the state legislature. You know, when you're voting for a senator, you're not just voting for Senate, you know, so to speak. You are actually voting for the majority in the U.S. Senate, right? Your senator will contribute to or make up either the majority coalition or the minority coalition in the Senate. Whereas when you vote for governor, that person is an executive, and so they are singular. And I do think that, you know, voters who think about splitting their tickets, voters who consider something other than a party line strategy, are also thinking about that. They are saying to themselves, do I want this party or that party to be in control in a legislative body? And that's different than, do I want the governor's mansion to be run by one party or another?
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to political scientist Laura Brown about split ticket voting, when people vote for different parties on the same ballot, maybe one in a race for governor, one in a race for Senate. Still time for you to join in with your questions, your practices, if you're willing to share that. When it comes to ticket splitting, you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Laura, one thing I wonder about with legislatures, as you were just talking about, the idea of if someone's voting for majority control, there's this concept of party discipline. How well do members of a party hold together to vote for something? You know, occasionally we get, you know, a Joe Manchin holding up this piece of legislation, or John McCain as senator holding up overturning Obamacare at one point. How much has that party discipline has changed? How does that affect that decision to vote for this candidate based on your hopes for party control?
Well, I do think that's a big part of what's going on. What we see is that legislation nowadays is really built, I would argue, from kind of the extreme ends of each party's coalition inward, rather than starting from the center and then building outward as they used to. And this is something that's been going on from the 90s. And I do think that this party discipline has also made it more difficult for people to want to split their votes, because they say to themselves, look, even if I vote for this person who says they want to be independent, when they get there, they're not going to be able to. And I know that, so I better, you know, cast my ballot all one way. And I mean, it's a fascinating moment we're in, because in some ways what we are seeing is so much of what we saw in the Gilded Age, before we could even do ticket splitting, because the parties actually printed and counted the ballots.
You are interested in Wisconsin, of course. We have close elections, so where ticket splitting could mean that we have a senator from one party, a Democrat from another. What are some of the other big states that are on your radar where split tickets could really sway things one way or another?
Well, certainly, I think nationally, everyone is looking at Arizona and Pennsylvania. Those are states where we saw, you know, President Trump kind of weigh in with his favored candidates. And those candidates are not faring as well in the general election as they did in the primaries. And there is this sense that you could see kind of opposite results in these states, though Pennsylvania appears to be leaning toward both Democrats winning, but certainly Josh Shapiro, who's running for governor, is much more favored over Mastriano than Fetterman is over Oz. And then I think you look at Arizona, where you can see that the Carrie Lake and Katie Hobbs' race for governor is much closer than the race for senator, where Mark Kelly is leading.
Now, part of all of these races will be decided by, you know, turnout. Democrats, do they show up? Republicans, do they show up? I want to talk about the independents. Sometimes I think in the media, I have the experience anyway of thinking, okay, well, there's Democrats, there's Republicans, and all these independents in between them in the middle. That's not really how it works, right? Like, we might have that socially liberal, fiscally conservative caller who agrees with one party on this, one on that. One might have a single issue that they're that's important to them. What do we know about the independent voter and how they make these decisions?
Well, we don't know enough. I mean, the truth of the matter is independent voters and moderates are people who really need a closer study from political science. There is something of a consensus in political science that these people may just not be as interested in politics. But some of the more recent findings are that it may be more accurate to say they just think about politics differently. And whether they are sort of completely moderate across all of their issues or they have a mix of liberal and conservative issues, the general spectrum just doesn't suit them very well. And so this is where I would say, you know, the one thing that we do know is that these voters tend to make up their minds later in the process, so closer to Election Day. And it's often the reality that these voters do end up being decisive in who ends up winning the race. So I do think the parties should focus on them more. The candidates certainly should, and absolutely political scientists should as well.
Laura, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
We've been talking to Laura Brown, political scientist and author of Amateur Hour, Presidential Character and the Question of Leadership. She is with us today to talk about the decline of split-ticket voting and why it could still be a big deal in closely contested states like Wisconsin, with big races for governor and the U.S. Senate. If you have a history of voting split tickets, still love to hear from you. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Do you do it all the time, or do you remember the last time you did it? If so, how long ago was it? You can email ideas@WPR.org and let us know.